I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know. The NCAA tournament continues this weekend. We're going to start this week's segment by talking about some stats you probably won't hear about during the television broadcasts. I'm joined by New York Magazine contributing editor Will Leach and by Derek Jackson, contributor to The Undefeated. Welcome to both of you.
An honor, as always.
Thank you, Karen.
Derek, you're up first.
This is my 23rd year of doing graduation rates of both the football bowl teams and the March Madness basketball teams. And the part I really enjoy is comparing the women's graduation rates with the men's, particularly since, in a very real sense, what the women are doing represents one of the highest forms of equality in all of American education. So this year, the entire women's field had a graduation rate, as defined by the NCAA, of 92%.
Wow.
96% for white players, 88% for black players. So there's a little room for growth because 88 is a B+. 31 of the women's teams had a 100% graduation rate for black women. This contrasts very different with the men. To be clear, the men's graduation rates, including the black athletes, has improved over the years. What has still remains, to me, a very symbolic of the exploitation that still goes on is the disparities between the white graduation rates and the black graduation rates. The worst was Abilene Christian with a gap of 46 percentage points between the 29% for black players and the 75% for white players. There were several other schools where the graduation rates were at least 33 percentage points different. And in fact, in lots of metrics, it just seemed like in so many cases, the success of black men compared to white men was sort of 3/5 that success. So I called it the 3/5 compromise, hearkening back to the constitutional compromise in 1787. So the women play the same number of games as men. Mm-hmm. The intensity to perform is the same as the men. And somehow those programs still graduate their players. The men don't. There's no excuse.
And before I send it to you, Will, we should just point out that these stats do not include players who go pro early but are in good standing academically with the university, right? Like those people are just not included in these stats.
That's correct. And they get credit for transfers who come in and do graduate.
Great.
So it's the most generous statistic the NCAA could offer.
The idea of graduation rates in college sports, frankly, so rarely even comes up in conversation anymore. To be honest, the debate about college sports has actually kind of gone away from are we graduating these players and more why aren't we paying these players and how do we... And I'm really glad, Derek, that you are actually... Like, this is something you've stayed on for so long, because not to say that the conversation we're having about paying players is not important, but the idea that, like, these... I know that we have tried to... During the tournament, we kind of pretend it's not about college basketball, but actually about college.
Right.
But it is. These people are actual college students, and the point of going to college is to graduate. And for some reason, this used to be a central part of every conversation about college sports, and I think it's almost faded away entirely.
You know, it's so funny. Every time I have a conversation with someone about the concept of paying players, they say, why would you pay them? They're getting a free education. And I'm like, no, many of them are not getting a free education. And that's really kind of the point here. You know, I've been following these reports for many years, maybe not all 23, but a lot of the years I've been paying attention to them. And it feels like the takeaway is usually somewhere along the lines of progress has been made, but gaps still remain. And you bring up Abilene Christian, which is just someone has really got to talk to them. But overall, it seems like this progress is very, very slow. And I'm wondering if you ever find yourself adding up all these numbers and just wanting to scream at your computer screen and say, why aren't we getting better faster?
Well, I know why we're not getting better faster. I once asked Mark Emmert, the head of the NCAA, shouldn't you track these graduation rates and think about sanctions in terms of race? Because so many of these schools, they technically get to the 50% graduation rate that is kind of the rough standard now that's acceptable, mm-hmm. To avoid sanctions by having these astronomical white rates and horrible or mediocre black rates. And to me, black athletes are the canary in the coal mine in division men's basketball and football, because they're vastly disproportionately represented on these teams. And he said no. And I actually called the office about a couple years ago to try to update this, because these disparities continue. And I didn't get a response. So unless the NCAA is going to deal with the racial aspect of these graduation rates, there's not going to be any change.
On Monday morning, at March Madness, tweeted a meme with the caption, quote, "When you find out there are no hashtag March Madness games until Thursday." The only problem? Well, round two of the women's tournament was being held that very same night. Now, if we try to point out all the stupid things that has ever been said on Twitter, we will be here all day and all day tomorrow and all day the day after that. But it does bring up something really interesting to me, and that is that the NCAA actually has two separate Twitter accounts for the men's and the women's tournaments. So the men get at March Madness, which is, quote, "the official NCAA March Madness destination for all things Division I NCAA men's basketball, hashtag March Madness," end quote. It has nearly 1.4 million followers. Now, the other Twitter account is at NCAA WBB. Yeah, just try to say that. And it doesn't even use the March Madness hashtag, but instead relegates women's games to hashtag NCAAW. I mean, I can't even say it. It's ridiculous. Why, oh, why do we need two separate Twitter accounts for the men's and women's tournaments? Are men's fans really going to turn away from their Twitter machines if they're forced to watch women celebrating games? They're not. So I feel that there should be no reason why we shouldn't let fans of the men's game know how much fun the women are having. Derek, what do you think?
Totally agree. I mean, I wish the NCAA would take just a little bit of a look at tennis, going back to Navratilova, Everett, Billie Jean King, and now obviously the Williams sisters, you know, the interest in that. I wish they'd take a look at what are the top sports looked at in the Olympics, figure skating, gymnastics. I mean, my wife and I sit up for hours watching women's gymnastics during the Olympics. We probably watch that together more than any other sport. And so I think the NCAA has a little, they believe too much in the old stereotype that the athletic feats of men, stronger, powerful, all that. And frankly, I enjoy watching the women play. I can follow the strategy. I also know they're in it for, you know, much more substantive reasons than a lot of the one and dones.
Well, you know, I think one way to tackle this would be to look at the sponsors of the tournament. I'm sorry, not the sponsors. The corporate champions of the tournament, as they are called by CBS. Sorry, I didn't mean to call them sponsors. Ooh. They're much more hallowed than mere advertisers. But I mean, the NCAA has often separate deals with the women's tournament and the men's tournament, which I think that for me, you get Coca-Cola or you get Capital One or other champions to maybe actually be a larger part of the women's tournament. I think that would make a difference. But the NCAA, listen, one of the craziest things about the tournament is there is 11 months out of the year, we think that NCAA are like the most, we hate them, and we boo them. And then 1 month of the year, we're like, hey, did you fill out your bracket? We like it. But it is kind of funny, though, because I think the NCAA is even losing this month a little bit more. But one of the few things I like about the internet anymore is when a brand will try to do like a funny meme, but like says something stupid and or offensive and just gets hammered for it afterwards because the brands are not your friends. So just because the brand does like a funny Parks and Recreation gif does not mean that they're cool. It just means that they have a probably very underpaid social media intern.
Absolutely. But speaking of that very underpaid social media intern, one of the things that's always said about promoting women's sports is, oh, it's going to cost money, right? Hey, if you just merge the social media streams, you have one less underpaid social media intern to pay. Will, you're up.
So opening day was this week. And there's an Effectively Wild podcast, a great podcast by Sam Miller and Ben Lindberg and Meg Rowley. And they have a theory that baseball would be a lot better if you just had no off-season news. And then just the season started and you were like, wow, Bryce Harper's on the Phillies now. Whoa. Paul Goldschmidt's on the Cardinals. That's amazing. And that sounds like comical, But I have to say, I thought about this a lot on opening day this week, because, you know, we spent this entire offseason hearing about nothing's happening. But the idea that, like, nothing happened, there were massive shifts that went on in baseball this offseason. This got me thinking, if I may pick this all the way around, of the end of the Mueller investigation. I wrote about this for New York Magazine. We've had so much speculation and so much, what's in there? What's going to happen? That people are exhausted. So by the time it actually has come out, we're all just like, yeah, boy, we expected so much worse. The way we cover both sports news and political news has become to the point that we are physically incapable of having perspective on it. So I always think about my father. My father does not pay attention to offseason news. He doesn't pay attention to sports recruiting. He just goes in on opening day. He's like, hey, awesome, look who's on our team now. And on one hand, that sounds insane in this media environment to do that. On the other hand, he was like, wow, this is really exciting that Paul Goldschmidt's on the Cardinals now. And wow, Trump really did a lot of stuff. You tell me, who's right, me or him? I think it's him.
Derek, what do you think?
Well, I'm with you all the way, man, because I remember summer 2008, I was on a scout trip in New Mexico. And when we took off, we were looking at ESPN on takeoff to New Mexico. It was the story, was Brett Favre retiring? Was he going to another team? And then we were in the New Mexico wilderness for 2 weeks. And when we were at the airport going home to Boston, it's 2 weeks later. And Brett Favre is still not decided whether he's retiring or going to another team. So I said, that's it. I'm not going to pay any attention to this stuff in the summer anymore during the football offseason. I'm with you.
You know, well, we're laughing about this. But I think there are consequences to the fact that we pay this much attention to this very small incremental news. I think it's really kind of somewhat dangerous. Like, we think back to just 5 weeks ago, Manny Machado had just signed what was, at the time, the largest free agent deal in history. And we were kind of unmoved. You know, we were like, no, nothing has happened, nobody's signed, this is ridiculous. Players union head Tony Clark was using words like strike and hinting at collusion. And of course, since then, the record set by Machado has been broken. And I'm beginning to wonder if the reason why we went straight to strike instead of just there are problems with free agency is because there was all this incremental news of nothingness. And it just kind of has me worried. Am I being cynical or is there something really there?
No, I mean, this has happened. This is not just in baseball, too.
Right.
Like, look at like the NBA. The NBA has had this, actually, whether you consider it a problem or not, they've certainly had the situation for a few years now where talking about the NBA seems to often be more exciting for people than actually physically watching the NBA. And it's funny, to me, the example of this now in the NBA is Kevin Durant with the Knicks. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, the idea of Kevin Durant, one of the best players in NBA history, going to the Knicks, who I literally just saw them play last week, and they lost to a team of second graders that played at halftime. Like, it is unbelievable that Kevin Durant might go to the Knicks. But because there's been all these stories and all these rumors and all these so on, by the time that happens, if it happens, and I can't believe it could possibly happen, but if it happened, we'll be like, yeah, we kind of saw that. Like, real life is just somehow not satisfying as our imaginations running away with us.
Well, so how do we fix it? What do we do about it?
I think it's time to shut down the internet, Karen. I think I don't know. I think it's going to be too late. It's too late to put that genie back in the bottle, I'm afraid.
My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been New York Magazine contributing editor Will Leach and Derek Jackson, contributor to The Undefeated. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Karen.
We'll be right back with Charlie Pierce. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Only a Game NPR.